From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Bonjour, avec, bonjour, wait, hold on.
Google Translate.
Babelfish.com.
Jeeves.
Bonjour, and welcome to, Bonjour, and welcome to Midnight the Movie Cowboys.
Tain. It's a Tain, you fat whop, it's a Tain.
What? Come on. That was kind of French. Hold on, let me start over. Bonjour and welcome to Midnight the Movie Cowboys. I am your host, Monsieur Hunter Doucin. we have Mr. Monsieur Stuart Bulk. Assez bonjour, Stuart.
Bonjour, Madame.
Bonjour. Avec Monsieur John Grace. C'est bonjour, John.
Bonjour.
Oui, oui.
Madame, do you shave under your arms, hairy woman, French woman?
No, I like them hairy.
You look like you got two mijettes under your arm, woman. Shave, damn it, shave.
Mm. I love a stinky fromage under the armpit.
There goes our Paris listeners and Montreal listeners.
I know, but hey, those Canadians can fuck off.
Jesus.
I'm just kidding. Don't go, Canadian listeners. I love you.
And Hunter's address is, because I've been there.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
There are plenty of Canadians I love. Rush. There you go.
We actually have a certain number of.
We really do, actually, yeah, so.
God damn it. I'm talking about the Quebecians. I don't like them.
Oh, yeah, well, probably a lot of the other Canadians would probably back you on that.
Yeah.
A bit like New Zealanders and Australians who get us all mixed up.
Well, I've heard, like, the French despise the Quebecians. They're like, they don't even speak French correctly.
No, they sound like French people who've lived in a cave for several hundred years. I think.
Yeah, it's sort of like a redneck French or something. Or lumberjack French.
Yeah. It would be like if people thought that, like, Appalachian rednecks represented the English language.
Right.
You know.
Hey, so we just cast off half the planet in 5 minutes. Hey.
There goes all our listeners.
Yeah, there goes our ties severed with our new server as well.
People who listen to us know that we're mean cranks, right? Yeah.
Oh, I am today. I'm so fucking tired. It's not funny.
Well, we do work for a living, so it tends to come out.
Yeah.
We're just three Joe lunch buckets, that's all.
We're Joe six packs.
We're not going to sit here with the fake British accents or anything and act like we're getting a gig with the BBC.
No.
We're not eating snails and drinking fine wine.
Drinking the fromage.
We're bourbon and Budweiser types.
And VB. Yeah.
VB.
Yeah.
VB.
And if you're Stuart. Yeah.
If you're Stuart, you're VB and Holden type guy, right?
No.
Stuart's like Hank Williams Jr. and he's got like buckets of ice with beer
sticking
out. Actually, I got a shit ton of Crown. I got a shit ton of Crown Lager in the garage at the moment, so that's quite good. I'm enjoying my Crown Lagers lately. Right.
He's like Hank Williams Jr. in those old videos.
Yeah. Speaking of cold beer and, you know, I assume grilling, I ate a kangaroo for the first time, Stuart.
Really? Okay. Where'd you find it?
This burger place had they get various different types of meat in.
Right.
So sometimes you'll go in, they'll have bison. Sometimes you go in, they have venison. Yeah. And they said, do you want, you know, beef, turkey, blah, blah. And then they said kangaroo. And I said, what? Hold up a bit, kangaroo. And they were like, yeah, we got kangaroo this week. I was like, awesome. So I tried it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very lean. It's good.
It is. It's the leanest meat in the world. It really, yeah,
it was leaner than venison.
it really is. It's like if you look at the packaging that you get here with the kangaroo mince and the stuff that you buy, the ground kangaroo, or you might call it term. You look at the specs on the back. It's like no sodium, no fat, 99.9% protein. It's ridiculous. Bodybuilders, actually, I think I mentioned before on the show, bodybuilders, when they come over here for the Australian Classic in March, just seek out kangaroo, because that's all the fucking, all the lean shit is. That and chicken, that's all they eat when they're here.
I couldn't believe how lean it was. I mean, it was awesome.
It's not, it's like a gamey sweet meat, but
yeah,
it's
it was I was kind of like, oh, it's like, it's got this sweet taste to it. Like it was different.
Honestly, the best thing to do with that is probably, I mean, I put cheese on mine because I just love cheese, but you don't have to. I'd put like a garlic aioli on it, and it's fucking outstanding. It really is. On a like a rye bun or a brown wholemeal bun or something. It's wicked. I mean, yeah, it's but it's definitely a different taste. I'm surprised you got it over in Dallas. I really am. It's
I know, I couldn't believe it. I was thinking, boy, I'd like to try a kangaroo sometime. And when they said that, I was like, oh boy. So I ordered it. And I enjoyed it, so I thought I would ask that. And that's been this episode of Midnight Foodie Cowboys.
Oh, great. Inspire a spinoff idea.
Yeah.
The Midnight...
the film version.
Yeah, the Midnight Roo Cowboys, I think we call ourselves this week.
And there, it'll be there with Hunter Looks at the Movies. and our as-of-yet-unnamed music podcast.
I've been meaning to talk to you about that as well, because it's just like all these kick-ass fucking movies and albums, documentaries and albums coming. I'm like, geez, where are we going to start this fucking music one, you know?
I know, right? We need to do that.
Yeah, we do.
But the reason I started off doing a offensive burlesque of the French people was that we're looking at a French movie tonight, and that movie is Nuit Sauvage, directed by Georges Franju, also known as Shadow Man, when it was released in the United States by New Line Cinema. And it was I'm just going to call him Georges Franju from now on. I'm not going to get all fancy with it. But it was his last movie, from what I understand. You may know him from such films as Eyes Without a Eyes Without a Face, not the Billy Idol song, but the also known as Les Yeux Sans Visage, and as well as one of my favorite sort of pulp superhero movies, or not really pulp because it's not based on a pulp character, but Judex, his remake of the Foyade serial. So,
which I thought when you got a
Criterion release.
Yes, it did. Both that and Les Yeux Sans Visage are available on Criterion.
When you mentioned about doing this, I thought I remember you saying about wanting to do a Judex show. I'm thinking, what the hell is Judex? Sounds like a fucking... like a Spanish horror film or some sort of, you know, laxative pill for tight ass Jews, you know, just
Judex. Oh my god. I didn't even think about that.
You don't think, what is this Judex?
I believe it's Latin for justice. That's what it means.
They need, like, the Beatles need to do a riff on, like, Hey Judex.
Hey Judex.
Just do, like, bits of the fucking chicken head in the video placed on John Lennon's head, you know?
It's mainly remembered for the bird head image.
Yes.
Because that got reprinted in all the film publications of the last
year. They should stick that bird's head on, like, Yoko Ono's, because it'd be a massive improvement.
I agree.
Fuck Yoko Ono. I can't stand her.
Look up Yoko Ono John Zorn live and
oh no,
kill yourself.
Yeah.
if you ever think, you know, I want to commit suicide but I just don't have the balls, just feed that through your sound system. You'll be ready to end it all pretty quick.
Actually, John Lennon listened to that the day before he was killed and he said, oh, I can't take it, just find me some crazy fan with a gun, please. I can't take it.
Well, he said activate the sleeper cell. But, I believe he said Jesse Ventura, like, you know, MK Ultra project conspiracy. It's all true.
Thermite paint.
There's half a million Beatles listeners who just switched off. It's like,
have you, like, I heard this interview with Jesse Ventura recently, and he's like, Mark David Chapman goes to John Lennon earlier that day and gets his autograph. Why? I'll tell you why. The government had him killed because he spoke out for peace, just like Martin Luther King and Malcolm X.
Yeah, because those are the only people ever in history that spoke out for peace.
Yeah.
They'd have to be wiped out. No one else ever thought of it.
Oh, my friend went to the Vatican archives and found out that JFK and Khrushchev were negotiating for peace in Vietnam. That's why JFK was killed. As a mediator.
It's like they don't even read history at all. Like, it's completely garbled, messed up, like comic book bubblegum wrapper history. Like, they have no knowledge of what actually happened.
My question is, how the fuck does a dickhead like Jesse Ventura get much traction on this show? Really?
I don't know. That's my opinion.
He's an idiot. Dead set, brother. He's an idiot.
He's the pits.
When I sued Chris Kyle's estate, I was crucified by the press, and I said I'm going to become the body again. Fuck him.
Well, he's like taking money. He's got his show is on the RT, which is basically Putin's news network. financed out of Moscow. So, yeah, we're not going to get any real conspiracy thought there, you know.
Yeah.
Vladimir Putin was assassinated when he spoke out for peace.
For bombing ISIL.
When he decided he wanted to stop bombing ISIL, that's when they got him.
Yeah,
this is future Jesse Ventura.
He's a fucking clown. I'm surprised he's not dead yet. Like, the steroids messed him up so much, like, he couldn't do blade jobs when he was wrestling because his blood was too thin. It wouldn't clot. So he could not blade.
He would have bled like a stuck pig, wouldn't he?
He would have died, and he had to do commentary because he wasn't very good in the ring anyway. Adrian Adonis always kind of carried him as his tag partner.
Oh, God, really?
He was one of those guys who got in, had a big physique, and argued with the ref for 10 minutes and would run back to the locker room, and the babyface would get on the mic and call him a chicken shit, get back here, you know? It's just a routine they pulled many times in the AWA and the WWF of the 70s.
Oh, my gosh.
So, Shadow Man. Anyway, yes.
Back to this frog movie.
Yeah. But, hey, I'm just a frog man watching this presidential race.
Sorry. Jesus!
So, what the Jesse Ventura?
Sure, would you have been doing Abraxas?
Yeah!
Instead of this French movie.
So we're Nuit Rouge. We're just going to call it Shadow Man from here on out.
Yeah, I always knew it as Shadow Man.
So this movie, I think it was Franju's last film, and it came out in, I believe, one second, I don't have it in front of me.
1974.
Picked up in 75 by New Line.
Yeah.
IMDb lists New Line releases as being in May of 1975. However, I found a Janet Maslin review in New York Times in 1979.
Wow.
So they may have regionally unrolled this out very slow, because as I always have to remind people back then, movies did not open nationwide.
And plus, New Line was basically a small, like, they released, like, foreign and independent, like, cult movies, you know?
Yeah, they
weren't the powerhouse studio they are now.
Yeah, John Waters stuff and Sonny Chiba movies and different, like, weird foreign acquisitions. They weren't.
Right.
It was probably Bob Shea and, like, maybe five other hippies mailing out 35 millimeters.
This is the company that before Freddie built it, right?
Yes.
Right.
That was, like, in the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But so, and the thing about this film is that Franju's films, especially Judex, sort of have this this fascination with and, you know, it's a little more nuanced than this, but the sort of Fouillade serials of the early 1900s. And because Shadow Man is basically Fantomas.
Yeah.
You know, but one thing that's interesting is that even though, like, the Shadow Man character is played by Fouillade's own grandson, I read an interview with Franju where he said that actually this movie isn't really so much a love letter to the Fouillade films. It's a love letter to the pulp Fantomas novels.
Right.
He said, because he read those, he said he'd never watched the Fantomas movies growing up. And he said when he made Judex, he'd never seen it. He went and he had to go and watch it like at in Germany because there were no prints in France. He said that the Foyard film he loved was Le Vampire. And you can see that in Judex with the Edith Skob character running around with her mask and the jumpsuit, kind of like the Irma Vep character in Le Vampire. And she also played the same character in Judex, but it was less – she was more of a scheming type, not this person who ran around in disguises stabbing people.
Is that the one looked like Catwoman? Is that her?
Yeah, 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 her.
Because
Gail Honeycutt is doing the role in Shadow Man.
In Shadow Man, Gail Honeycutt is the girl running around in the jumpsuit with the mask on, and she sort of is the Irma Vep type. But he said that he and Foyard's grandson were lovers of the novels by Marcel Alain and I forget the other guy's name.
Probably Pierre or something.
Let me see. Well, anyway. But
Johnny Bernays.
Robert E. Howard. No.
Alfred E. Newman.
Pierre Sylvestre.
Yeah, Pierre Sylvestre. There you go.
Yeah.
They said that this movie was more – because at this time, the Fantomas movies were – they were remade in the 60s with a series of films that are well-liked.
It was a trilogy. Very popular too. Popular back then.
Yeah, and we'll do those sometime in the future on the show because I want to do a Fantomas show. But it was this movie. They said was more in line with the books. They loved the sort of sadism of the books that you didn't really get in the Foyard films.
Can I ask you a question? Why did you choose this one over Judex?
Well, I do want to do Judex in the future.
Yeah, I know. That's why I thought that's what we were going to do. But
this one was more easy to come by on the internet, really, because it's on YouTube.
So is Judex.
The English dub is on YouTube, so we figured that was plus it's interesting that of all those films, this was the one that New Line put out an English dub of in the 70s.
Right. I mean, and it was
really unique at that time for any French movie to come out like that.
Yeah. And didn't you think that this movie, Shadow Man, didn't you think it sort of almost felt like an Italian genre film at times with its score? It sort of has that dreamy giallo type store.
It's look as well,
And Fonju said he shot the movie in Yugoslavia, and he said that the Yugoslavians like good crew members, but they're horrible artists, and that's one reason there's no shots of windows in the movie. He said there's hardly any shots of windows because they couldn't do backdrops to worth a damn.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like if you watch Eyes Without a Face and. And Judex, there's a lot of like airy mansions, like lots of windows and sort of countryside. You know, they're very open feeling, very open and airy. And he said this movie feels really claustrophobic as a result because he was trying to shoot around their horrible window sets. And and he said he went to France to do a lot of the exterior work. But he said the movie feels more claustrophobic than most of his other films as a result.
I thought it was because it was shot for TV simultaneously, which I'd always heard it was edited from the TV miniseries. But it turns out it was actually shot at the same time with like one version on 35mm and the other on 16mm for TV.
Oh, interesting. I never heard.
Which is, you know, it's just one of those stories that only came around recently. And I'm like, okay. Which doesn't make much sense. Why wouldn't you just edit it from the 35mm?
But right.
Apparently that's what they did. But who knows why. But the TV version is supposedly a lot longer. But I've never seen it. I've never seen it available anywhere.
No. So. I saw the French version of this because I have the the Region 2 Masters of Cinema.
Well, of course, Mr. Aeroshelf.
I know. I got my Eureka Masters of Cinema shelf.
We would not ask you to go on YouTube and dishonor this film with a standard definition transfer in an English dub.
What do you have it on, Region 2 DVD or Blu-ray?
DVD. It comes on a Masters of Cinema put it out with Judex in a DVD set.
Okay,
I do want to buy that eventually because I'd like a better transfer of this.
It's really good. Although I will say the Shadow Man version is matted, like you said, John.
Yeah,
but it still looks good. Like it's still a really good transfer. But it stars Gail Honeycutt, as we mentioned earlier. We have Jacques Champreau, who also wrote the script, and he's Foyard's grandson. And we also have Mr. Goldfinger, Gert Frobe,
yeah,
as mm-hmm. the detective. And what's funny about this movie is I saw this and The Thousand Eyes of Dr. Mabuza recently. And both feature movies where Gert Frobe plays a detective going after a master of disguise criminal. Because in Dr. Mabuza is a very Fantomas-inspired criminal character. He's kind of different. He doesn't really get his hands dirty. He hypnotizes and sort of is this he's more of a abstract figure.
He's like a white Fu Manchu. He's
yeah. Yeah, totally. He is white Fu Manchu in The Thousand Eyes of Dr. Mabuza, which was also Fritz Lang's final film, so another director's final film.
Well, I guess they've all got to have one, don't they?
Yeah, but it's funny how Gert Frobe plays the same character in these two.
Well, he looks like a cop. It's like how Ronnie Cox always played a cop in movies. It's
and
like
he kind of
Gene
looks
Hackman,
like,
you know.
Well, he kind of looks like the guy who played the Inspector Lohman character in The Testament of Dr. Mabuza and him. He played the same character in those two movies for Fritz Lang, and he looks a lot like him, and he's playing that type of character.
Right, right.
For Lang, and he's kind of, you know, he looks like a cop, and he's playing the cop here, too. But I haven't seen him in any movies except these two movies and Goldfinger. I've never seen anything else.
And he's dubbed in Goldfinger.
Is he really?
I think
the entire performance is dubbed.
Yeah, he didn't speak any English.
Well, that's his fucking problem, isn't it?
Well, he was speaking it phonetically, but it didn't sound great. But the thing is, especially in those early Bond films, a lot of characters are dubbed.
Yeah,
like Ursula Andress is dubbed.
Yeah,
and Danielle Bianchi is dubbed, and it was actually just an accepted thing back then.
Yeah,
you dub the performance if it didn't come out great. It's like, all right, dub them.
It happens more often than you'd think, even today. A lot of movies are recorded in post. But
even Andy McDowell was dubbed in Greystoke, right?
Yeah, recently Gina Carano was dubbed in Haywire.
I was about to bring that up, Gina Carano.
Which everybody will get real pissy because she has this insane fandom of middle-aged men that refuse to believe that. Said, who will argue with me and say, no, her voice was electronically altered. I'm like,
why?
That's a nice way of saying she was dubbed.
Yeah.
They brought another actress in and dubbed her, because if you watch her in other movies, the movie stops dead in its track when she talks. Just like she cannot... She's not a talker.
Well, speaking of dubs, so was our very good friend Mark Gregory, aka Trash, was dubbed in the Bronx Warriors.
Some people have been dubbed.
But you watch a lot of those classic Italian films. The American actors, you're going to be watching it dubbed either way, because you know if you watch The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. If you watch it in English, you get Clint Eastwood, Lee Van Cleef, and Eli Wallach speaking English, and then the rest of the cast is dubbed.
Yeah.
And if you watch it in Italian, those three stars are dubbed, and the rest of the cast is speaking Italian.
Well, I read an interview with Ted Russoff, who dubbed a lot of movies for AIP, a lot of Italian films and other foreign stuff, and he said only in America do they have a problem with dubbing. He said that in Europe, the Italians, the French, the German, they don't care. They've watched movies dubbed their whole life.
No, like, look at
they don't care.
Even if you look at the art house stuff, Fellini, you watch La Strada, everybody's, Anthony Quinn and the other lead actor, whose name I forget, who plays the fool character, they're dubbed in Italian by some other actor. If you watch the American version, if you watch the dubbed version, you get their voices, but the rest of the cast, including the leads, are dubbed in English. Either way, you can't be a purist. Being a purist is for, 20-year-old film fans.
Hang on. Mad Max? Do you take the dub over the original there?
Well, no, but that's because the dub was made for – that dub was made just because they thought Americans will never understand these Aussie people. They thought – so, but that was misguided, right?
Well, I think they were also thinking they could pass it off as an American movie.
Because
it doesn't really specify Australia or Melbourne or anything in the film. It just looks like this science fiction movie they could just try to pass off as anything.
Yeah, so.
And it was aimed at the 42nd Street Market. They didn't care about aiming at mainstream. That was AIP's big misjudgment. When Warner Brothers got Mad Max 2, they knew that had critics. Potential. They knew it. They screened it for critics and everything and went state to state with it throughout the year and screened it as the big critically acclaimed action movie.
Because it was.
Yeah.
All right.
They backed it up. AIP didn't know what to do with Mad Max when they got it. They said, oh, okay, it's a futuristic action movie, and we'll just
throw some dubbing on.
Yeah.
Push it in Fangoria magazine. Send a press kit to Fangoria magazine. They didn't know what to do with it.
And we'll make a shit poster to go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fake Frank Frazetta poster.
I hate it.
Gay leather double shotgun holder
with the full face
like
on it. Yeah.
Hey, I'm gonna shoot you. Okay. Hey, you better get out of the car right now.
I do like the limping hand that's like on the side of the poster, though.
It's like, hey,
blood motorcycle.
Yeah.
You guys are driving too fast.
Yeah. So the Mad Max of the East Village.
So, John, did you see
Christopher Street Max?
Did you see Shadow Man back when it came out in theaters, or when did you see it originally?
I had read about it. I think Tim Lucas had a column in Gorezone and mentioned it was out there. I think it was Media Home Video, Media Entertainment Group. They released a lot of New Line and a lot of independent stuff from the 70s on video. And they had released it on videotape, I think in 1982 or some very early year like that. So it was one of the early titles for video rentals, which is straight. It's such a bizarre film. And I found it in a video store in 1992 and rented it and watched it one night. And I was visiting a friend who was at a college, like in another city. And I said, hey, let's go to the video store and see if we can find anything rare. You know, before we go to the club, let's watch a weird movie. And I was like, oh, shit, there's Shadow Man. And so we rented it.
Was it Garo?
No. Nah, it was a friend of mine that I haven't seen or talked to in years. In fact, this friend became a voice artist for the Cartoon Network.
Oh, wow.
Cartoons, nice.
Yeah, cartoons.
Yeah, mate.
But you can hear his voice doing an ad promo for, like, the Powerpuff Girls. I think that's the show.
Oh, wow, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, he used to do voices for, like, and he did a good imitation, you know, broadcast voice and eventually made it a professional gig out of it. But, yeah, I watched Shadow Man then, and, you know, I thought it was interesting, but never encountered it at any other video store ever again, and until it popped up on YouTube, I had not seen it in decades.
And, Stuart, this was your first time seeing it?
No, I didn't even know. Never even heard of it.
Yeah, you didn't even. You were like, what? I don't know.
2 days ago, I said, yeah, well, so was Torch and Phantom. I must have even got the wrong movie.
So the plot of this movie, it's about there's this man who's he's a guy who studies the Knights Templar, but really he's a member of the Knights Templar. It's like, you know, secret underground organization. And his butler sells this information to a seemingly diminutive old lady at a haberdashery. And it turns out this old lady is not, in fact, an old lady, but, you know, this master criminal who's a master of disguise. And the haberdashery is the front for his criminal empire. And he decides that, you know, like, oh, this guy has these Knights Templar treasures. I'm going to go steal them from him, and it turns into this huge thing. He kills the guy, and he's trying to find out where this guy's Knights Templar treasure is. Meanwhile, the cops are chasing him, the Knights Templar are chasing him, and yeah, it's sort of a crazy you know, crime movie. And at the center of it, instead of having this hero, you have this master criminal.
Mm-hmm.
That, and you're kind of rooting for him, honestly, even though he's like murdering people left and right.
Yeah.
He uses corpses to carry out crimes for him, to assassinate people. He has this mad scientist working for him,
making zombies.
I love it. Like, he keeps these teenagers in these boxes with, like, on feeding tubes, and he's like, this is the future. We're gonna have human silos in every corner.
The ironic thing is, if you look at teenagers these days, they look no more alive than the zombies in this movie, so he probably was a visionary.
That bit was like a political statement or something.
Yeah.
But he's this criminal who has this, like, team working for him. He has these men with masks who help him with his tasks. He has this mad scientist.
He's got Gail Honeycutt.
He's got Gail Honeycutt.
She puts on a cat suit. And by the way, Gail Honeycutt is actually an American actress who had married David Hemmings and was living in England at the time of filming and started working a lot in European film and in British films. But yeah, she was an American from Texas, I believe.
And she, she looks good in this movie too. She's running around in that cat suit. I love the part where they trick. That's one of my favorite bits in the movie, is where they find Shadow Man's bug in the room, and they trick them into thinking that the guy's girlfriend knows something. So Gail Honeycutt shows up to kidnap her, and it's a trap, and she escapes. But she shows up in that old lady's room and stabs her, puts her up in the ceiling, and she acts like she's this brother, like, "Oh, hello, help me, I've been attacked." And then people notice the corpse bleeding out from the ceiling, and she, like, you know, punches them, knocks them out of the room, and escape. But just all that whole bit was just such a great sequence. Gert Frobe catches her, and then Shadow Man and his men show up and knock them back into place and run off with her. Mm. But it was that whole sequence I thought was just so terrific. And you have that weird, like, Ennio Morricone giallo music playing over it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's real minimalist.
Yeah.
It is.
It literally just sounds like a French guy pounding on a synthesizer.
And then you hear the, oh!
Yeah.
You know?
So. Yeah, I dug it. I think the only thing missing from the movie is, like, really good stunt work and action. And it felt like they really didn't have any stuntmen working on the film.
Yeah,
and so they couldn't stage any action, like, any real action scenes.
And when I read he shot it in Yugoslavia, I was like, that's why.
Because you would think they would try to do some, like, 007 style. Like, you have a chance for a great motorcycle chase when Gail Honeycutt is rescued by Shadow Man and his cohorts, and they get on motorcycles. I'm like, oh, this reminds me of a scene in Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, except there's no chase scene.
Yeah, they just ride off. Yeah, they just ride up onto that that, like, truck, and it shuts, and the truck drives off, you know?
Yeah. And it has an issue where, like, a lot of stuff is just master shots only. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like sometimes you're watching a play. There's not a lot of cutting.
Mm-hmm.
It's which, in a way, it makes it visually interesting, but it's not always the most exciting movie, which may have been why they couldn't sell it as an action, you know, like an action comedy in the 70s.
Right.
If you find that old New Line poster, they're trying to sell it like it's... They don't know what the hell to do with it. They just say,
that poster's hilarious, with Shadow Man as the Mona Lisa and all the people stabbing
him. Like, maybe they thought they had a Batman-type thing or something. And I'm talking about the TV show, Batman. Like, they really didn't know how to sell it, and it had to be a quagmire for them to just say, hey, it's got the guy from Goldfinger. It's got Gail Honeycutt. It's funny.
It's goofy, you know?
Yeah, they don't know what... And it's, when you watch it, it's not really that jokey. Like,
no,
a lot of humor is really more subtextual than out in the, it's not aggressive about it.
No, and like you said, it's very arty with the action, you know? And I like that stuff, you know, it's fun. Like, because Judex is kind of the same way, although Judex is a little more exciting with its cutting. But so, Stuart, what were some things you took away from this?
Some of the visuals I really liked as well. The first third of this film was really exciting. I was very keen to follow this story, but, oh man, it dropped away a lot towards the end. But the visuals, I like the robotics of the, that driver, when that guy's in that car and he's going, driver, you must stop, and then he turns around and says, this.
Mannequin,
the driver, and the actual car's being controlled by Shadow Man in some control center or something with a couple other guys who, when you put those three guys together, look like half the fucking band of TISM. I kept thinking, God, it's like a TISM music video, really. Those of you who know TISM, they're an Australian band who look a lot like Shadow Man did. I did take away one thing. I thought, bet your young filmmaker John Carpenter would have seen this, because Windows, that small army of robots was heading towards that guy, and boy, it looked like Michael Myers masks.
Yeah, they look like Nazi Michael Myers.
Really long before Michael Myers, I'm like.
They have those. They have these army of zombies, and they wear these overcoats with these red armbands and these masks, these like mannequin masks, and they just walk towards them with knives, like they're gonna stab them.
It also reminded me of Mr. Ring in the Kolchak the Night Stalker episode with the robot, played by future movie director Craig Baxley.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but there's a Mr. Ring who wears like a mannequin mask or costume mask that looks a lot like that too.
And the Knights Templar also have their own like funny masks that they wear.
Yeah, they came out like in action suits in the end to fight with Shadow Man's men, and they look like it's like diabolic.
It was like that.
Super Argo against the Faceless Giants and all the other like wonderful European Shadow Men movies they used to make. Because they used to call it, the genre was basically Shadow Men. Stuff like Fantomas and Arsene Lupin. And, you know, it was a big thing in their, I guess you'd call it their pulp literature of the early 1900s. Because I've read some of the Fantomas novels, but I find the translations are a bit stiff.
Yeah, they are. Because I'm reading some of them right now, and they're kind of, you know, not as exciting as I've heard there. But the people who love them are French and probably read them in French.
Yeah, and I know Americans who are fanatical for them, but the translations leave a lot to be desired.
Mm-hmm. But one thing I thought was fun about the Shadow Man character was that you never see his face ever.
No.
Yeah.
Like, every time... He either has his mask on, which is takes great care to not show any features of his face.
Not even his eyes. Yeah, they just stuck on.
His eyes look like these holes. Like, I mean, they have eyes there, but it looks like there's like nothing around them. Like, you see his eyes, but any flesh you see is like black and weird looking.
Yeah.
And like his mask seems like it's padded out to where you can't really see his features very well.
Mm.
And anytime he doesn't have his mask on, he's in disguise. He's dressed as, you know, the son of the dead guy, or he's dressed as, you know, the old lady, or the, you know, he has all these different characters that he dresses up as, and he'll change disguise like as he flees from a scene or something.
Yeah.
But he always has a funny plan to like get out of something, like when they find out he's impersonating the son of the guy he murdered from the Knights Templar. He offers them a whiskey and smashes the whiskey bottle, and it creates a flashbang that like gases them, and he flees the scene.
Yeah,
it's pretty fun. But yeah, and you know, the Fantomas wears a hood when he's just, you know, that's his like blank face, and he's usually in disguise otherwise. But you do get to see what the actor looks like. You know, he kind of has sort of a without disguise look, but this character, nope, nothing. You know, it's just a no face when he's not in disguise.
Yeah.
But one thing, we mentioned that the guys look like Nazis, the sort of John Carpenter type.
Yeah.
Slasher. The German version of this movie actually had a different ending. Because at the end of the movie, the Knights Templar destroy Shadow Man's lair. Right. But Gail Honeycutt and Shadow Man leave dressed as like the old lady and her helper.
Yeah.
And the people say, like, a customer of the store she runs goes, that he runs in disguise, goes, oh, are you coming back? And he's like, oh, yes, very soon. You know, we'll be back.
Right.
And it's sort of like, oh, he's leaving, but he's going to come back stronger than ever.
Perhaps.
And perhaps.
Yeah.
And in Germany, when they screened the movie, the censors said, you have to change the ending because they're going to see Shadow Man as a metaphor for Nazis.
Jesus.
So he shot a new ending where Shadow Man dies in sort of a Wagnerian finale.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that ending can be found anywhere out there. I haven't looked for it.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere. It'll just you know, have to crop up.
Be interesting.
Yeah. It'll turn up with London After Midnight, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see the TV miniseries version, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which, you know, would probably fill in a lot of kind of strange plot holes that seem to be in this movie.
Yeah.
Fill in a lot of Le Blancs.
Yes, Le Blancs.
Le Blancs.
So, but did you have any other thoughts on this movie? So you said you thought it kind of dropped off towards the end.
After about the first half of the film, I was like, yeah, okay, starting to drag a bit here for a film that's, what, 90 minutes. It's, starting to get a bit convoluted towards the end. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I certainly wouldn't recommend people not watch it. I thought it was a bit of fun. I did actually think to myself, if this film got remade, this would be a sort of vehicle for Nicolas Cage, actually. He did all that
Nicolas
sort of
Cage
shit.
For Shadow Man.
Oh, yeah, you could totally play Shadow Man and, you know, the Knights Templar and a bit like National Treasure and all that sort of crap. He's
right.
In those sort of, you know, yeah, adventure flicks. But were any filmmakers directly influenced by this Franju at all? Are they sort of made note about it? Because I don't know of him. I've never heard of him.
This is totally like, well, Billy Idol for one.
I Just Without a Face was a huge cult favorite. And
yeah.
A Clive Barker listed as one of his 10 favorite movies of all time.
We got to get Hunter's Clive Barker impression.
Clive Barker.
Hey, this is Clive Barker. Yeah. I love Eyes Without a Face. It's...
I need to work on my Clive Barker.
You got to get the really thick London accent.
It's been a while since I've tried to do my Clive Barker.
It's not as good as my favorite eye, with the eye of the penis. I don't care what the face looks like as long as that eye is good enough for me.
But
sorry, I got the... bit of semen I gotta move in my throat, dear. That's all.
God damn. Okay. Anyway. But Franju to me, sort of, I think a modern Franju would be like Christoph Gans. You know, this.
Who did announce he was going to do a new Fantomas movie a few years ago after The Dark Knight made like enough money to buy a Warner Brothers, another country, essentially.
Yeah, I saw that there were some fan posters.
With a script by Shane Black.
Of Fantomas by Christoph Gans on.
It was in the works, but never happened because Gans will announce three or four things. And
he's a bit like the French Guillermo del Toro.
He is. He did, and then he'll do the one thing he didn't announce, but he only makes a movie like every 5, 6, 7 years. So. Yeah.
And we're going to do our Christoph Gans show at some point because I'm a great fan of his stuff, too.
But he did announce a Fantomas movie to star, Vincent Cassel.
Of course.
And he was going to do a Diabolik movie starring Mark Dacascos, which would have been great, and he never made
it. A Fantomas movie with Vincent Cassel, it's perfect. Vincent Cassel even looks like Rene Navarre, the guy who plays Fantomas in the Fouillade serial. Like, he kind of has that look about him.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't he just get Johnny Depp instead? Like Johnny Depp is doing that new Fear and Loathing movie of Hunter S. Thompson, Fear and Loathing in Boston. Because he looks nothing like Whitey Bulger at all. It looks like Hunter S. Thompson all over again.
He looks like Johnny Depp wearing a skull cap.
Yeah, he does.
I mean, it's just not, and really overdoing the Boston accent. Too.
Like, the thing about the trailer for that movie was, I thought it looked really good, but Johnny Depp just looked like another, like, crazy Tim Burton character.
I am going to go see it. I really actually want to go and see it tonight, but I don't know if I have time. But honestly, if you want to see something about Whitey Bulger, watch the fucking documentary Whitey. It's the best thing you can watch. The Joe Berlinger one. That's all you'll need.
Right. Joe Berlinger did that. I forgot that.
Oh, God, it's good. I've seen it 3 times already. It's that good. I'll still go see. Was it Black Mass or something?
Black Mass.
Yeah. Black Mass. I'll go see that. I was deciding between that or Burnt, which I want to go and see. But I'm not sure yet.
But yeah, I think Franju's been sort of influential in a way. I don't think he's not like a household name as far as art house directors go. But, you know, Eyes Without a Face is a very well-regarded horror movie. And I think his version of Judex is the version of that people know, more so than the Fouillade version. I've seen the Fouillade version. If you're a fan of the Franju one, it's well worth watching.
Right.
But I want to do a Judex show at some point because I really like that film.
Yes.
A lot.
People on Facebook just got to go to Hunter's page and he likes Judex a bit.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right now, currently. You'll see that.
Yeah.
it's an awesome movie. But what would you guys give Shadowman Nuits Rouges? Stuart, what do you give it?
Like a 6, I think.
A 6, okay.
Yeah, it was just a slightly above average. I think the very first half it was real strong, but compared to the weaker second half. Apart from the John Carpenter, Michael Myers with no hair.
Yeah, I was going to say that's later on.
That was the highlight.
That's a really strong sequence.
You know that, what's that? Honeycutt.
Gail Honeycutt.
Yeah, her. She was nice as well.
Yeah, that sequence with her, you know, trying to kidnap the girl, getting fooled and escaping is great. I love that part. John, what would you give it?
I give it a 7.
A what?
7.
7? That's what?
7.
That's what I give it. Oh, sorry.
Ain't my frog talk. Yeah, we don't.
I have deceived you, Mr. Arrow. Monsieur Arrow Sheriff.
Give it a
Mon Dieu.
Yeah, you know, it's missing some stuff. It feels a bit incomplete, being edited from a miniseries or, you know, however it was derived from it. Also, but I love the atmosphere. I like the idea, and it's a pretty honest tribute to that era of French writing. And also, Gail Honeycutt is a knockout.
Yeah, I would give it a 7 as well. I mean, because I think Franju made stronger films with Jude X and Eyes Without a Face. So,
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Vous sentez-vous baissé rencontrer le fantôme du parc et prunté à ça la passe que des robots?
Pardon?
Okay. Do you feel the kiss Mr. Fan of the Park borrowed from this because of the robots is what I said?
No.
Fuck
yes. I think that was just something they made up as they went along.
Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park was from Westworld.
Well, I think this was that's about it for this episode, right? Do you have anything else? It's a pretty short one.
Finn.
I can at least say this, that I think this film is currently owned by Warner Brothers because they bought New Line Cinema and I think own all of New Line's acquisitions. So it'd be nice if they would look in their vaults and maybe release this on Warner Archives.
Yeah, no shit.
You know, I was gonna give say, us a, at least a nice looking version of the English dub because I think the English dub is well done. I have no problem with it.
Yeah, and, I'd buy it.
Yeah, and it's like this is one of those things sitting in their vaults that they could probably make a little money off of, and because it's completely unknown. Like we're the first podcast to probably cover this in English.
I think,
and most people don't even realize it exists.
Yeah. First podcast to cover it in English and very poor French as well.
That's a great point, John, that probably start sending emails to Warner Archive. Release Shadow Man hashtag.
Yeah, exactly.
Shadow Man,
unleash Shadow Man.
Yeah, unleash Shadow Man.
They're sitting on a lot of good stuff, and I don't
and that New Line poster, that Mona Lisa poster, perfect for a cover.
Yeah. And instead, of course, they're putting out, you know, Francis the Talking Mule, Burn on
they put out all these like movies from the 40s nobody's heard of.
Yeah. All these films.
All
we
these
don't know about.
Hollywood, the classics.
One of 80 million Bowery Boys movies, which I know, I mean, they're essential, but come on. put out some weird stuff that I think people appreciate. I'll give credit, though. They did put out the Tony Anthony set. Of the
I got that Stranger set.
Well worth picking up.
I got that. I recently bought Let's Scare Jessica to Death from them.
Well, I've never seen
it. It's good. It's a that's a Steve, good.
Stephen King loved it, but you know, I'm just kind
of course he did.
It's a good 70s horror movie. It's by the guy who did Bang the Drum Slowly.
Oh god, that was a miserable ass movie. That one.
Well, that which is sort of a strange jump, but it's a good sort of creepy horror movie. Like I liked it. I wouldn't say it's a classic or anything, but I was sort of taken by the creepy New England atmosphere that it had, and it sort of felt like in a weird way a predecessor to Halloween in that it has a lot of broad daylight horror and this sort of minimalist synth score. When I was watching it, it made me think of Halloween.
Halloween just ripped off Black Christmas, man.
Yeah, well, I think I people always talk about Black Christmas, but you know, I think this movie, there's a lot kind of that broad daylight sort of creepy feel that Halloween has kind of comes from this too.
Well, what's funny is I recently watched a Kirk Douglas movie that was made in England called Cat and Mouse.
Excellent film. Excellent movie.
Yeah, and Black Christmas ripped off the killer is inside the house with you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Dude, the fucking end of that movie, the end of that movie left me shaking. It was that disturbing. If you remember what it was,
really,
John, excellent. Very hard to find. I found it on VHS. I didn't own it. I did find it to rent. But
there's a new British DVD release that came out, I think, Network.
Oh, nice. Great little movie to watch. Really good.
Really
solid.
Nice, like a print. Really good Kirk Douglas performance, different from his others. He's not playing a very strong character. He's playing a meek character who goes nuts, and it's solid. And Black Christmas totally swiped the last 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And When a Stranger Calls. And
oh yeah, I was gonna say totally. When a Stranger Calls, the
killer's in the house. I was with you.
We traced the call. The killer's in the house.
Yeah, it all was in this film, and I think it was an inspiration on Black Christmas, which I think also Carpenter swiped a bit from Black Christmas for Halloween, but it's probably Irwin Yablon's suggestion, too. Or Yablon's. He doesn't get much credit for how much he came up with for Halloween.
A lot.
But yeah, Cat and Mouse is a good one. We may have to do a show on that in the future.
What was that, about 71, 72?
Like 72, I believe.
Yeah, right.
I don't have my DVD on hand, but I was surprised. And it apparently play theaters in England, but and the rest of the world, but was a TV movie in America.
Yeah,
which is why it's forgotten, because TV movies, if not enough people watched them that week, then they were just kind of forgotten, you know, until years later. But
there was so many good TV movies I remember from the 70s as a kid. Like, there was a one called, I don't know if you guys ever know of it, called A Girl Named Suna. You ever heard of that? With Cloris Leachman as the horrible grandmother to this girl, Suna. First woman I ever saw, you scared the crap out of me. Absolutely horrible old woman she was. Really good. Good movie. I think it might be on YouTube, but yeah, gone, forgotten, never saw it on video.
Well, there's a really good Judge D TV movie that was intended as sort of a pilot, starring the guy who plays Wo Fat on Hawaii Five-O back then. And,
that's the most horrible name I've ever heard in my life.
I know.
Wo Fat!
Much to my surprise, the Judge D movie was really good. It was an all Asian cast or Chinese American cast, and was done, played straight, written by Nicholas Meyer, who later directed a couple of the Star Trek movies.
Yeah, he did.
John, can I get a request from you? I'll build the scene up. So there's this fat guy eating his lunch in a cafeteria, and Seth Rogen's a teacher, and he sees his kid, and what does he say?
Hey! That's all he's
going to
say.
Whoa, fat!
Hey,
Steve Jobs!
Whoa,
that's your kid!
Whoa, fat!
Hey!
Good Lord, they don't care. All right.
Seth Rogen's the worst. But yeah, the TV movies back then, it was like Don't Be Afraid of the Dark is one everybody remembers, which they did a theatrical remake of. I've never seen Gargoyles. A lot of good thrillers. It was surprising what they were able to do.
There was a good one with Martin Landau. I can't remember. It was a horror film. He played like some Bible preacher, and he was on a mission that with a band of crazies. And I can't remember the title of the bloody movie at the moment. It was really, really good. I don't know if it was a theatrical or a TV movie. I can't think. Very, very good movie. Don't laugh.
Just on another note, I just saw a video footage of a topless protester running at Vladimir Putin.
Uh-huh.
And he gives her the two thumbs up before his people block him off.
Of course he does.
See, that's why the population loves him over.
Yeah, I know. You know, like, this lady's like, running at him, like protesting something, and he just gives her two thumbs up because she's topless.
If I was Putin, I would have been like two hands out.
he goes two thumbs up.
then he puts her in a judo move.
Yeah, exactly. And puts her in, wrestles her down like a bear, like one of the bears he wrestles.
I've always laughed at how over here they act like he's some sort of evil dictator, but I'm like, well, if you think of it from a Russian point of view, of course he's popular.
No, in Russia, like historically, like leaders like Putin are very popular.
Like, that's what they like.
They like the sort of totalitarian dictator type, Putin's sort of, he's a different breed than, you know, Stalin.
But to them, he's like James Bond became their president. You know,
right. He's a more modern version of that. Like, you know, he's not like the Ivan the Terrible type. You know,
right? Not like Stalin with the secret trials.
No, he's kind of he's more embracing of traditional Russian values than the communist dictators were. The communist dictators tried to sort of squash that out, and that was one thing that didn't really work for them.
Yeah.
Okay, so the film I'm thinking of, Martin Landau, is Alone in the Dark.
Alone in the Dark. Oh, yeah. No, that was not a TV movie. That was a New Line Cinema.
Yeah, wasn't that the one with...
From 1983, Jack Shoulder directed it.
Yeah, that's it. Jack Palance, Donald Pleasence, Martin Landau, yeah. Good movie.
Dwight Schultz from the A-Team, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing that on cable years ago.
Right, right. First, I don't know if it was a TV movie or was a theatrical release, but yeah, damn good film. 82. Right, yeah. Right. All right, well, let's wrap it up. I think we've got important news to announce, do we?
Yes, yeah, we are now being featured on at a new website, which has just started up in the last few weeks, and it is www.phantomsway.com. Nothing unique about the spelling. It is phantomsway.com, and it's sort of an arts and lifestyle entertainment website with all sorts of incredibly cool links. And we are the first podcast to be added to this this site and this network of distribution. Very proud to be on it.
Yeah,
and all kidding aside, and John is the one who orchestrated the whole lot of this. So, well done, John. Very good.
I pulled a few strings.
Yes.
So it's like, okay.
Bet's not the only thing you pulled.
Hey, you got a panda in this business.
Yeah,
you go check out phantomsway.com. Give them
a really cool site.
Yeah, PhantomSway. Like that Dean Martin song. Sway with me.
Sort of an artist co-op. You'll like it. I think our listeners will dig it.
Yeah.
You will. All right. Apart from that, all the other stuff, the website, the email, follow us on Twitter. Oh, and by the way, if you're going to follow us on Twitter, please don't fucking DM us saying, hey, can you check out my movie? Because it's usually a cheap-ass horror film. And to that guy who gave me shit because I told him his film was like fucking garbage, well, it did. So don't ask me for an opinion if you don't like it, all right?
That's the thing. If you're gonna send your indie movie out to people, be prepared for them to tell you it sucks. You know, just that's the thing. As I know, I have some friends who do horror podcasts, and these are very curmudgeonly horror podcasts.
Yeah.
And they often, you know, a lot of times they say, oh, we got this movie from this person. We said it was terrible, and now they're sending, they won't stop emailing us telling us what horrible people we are.
Oh, and
that's part of making a movie. Some people aren't going to like it.
And that filmmaker who I just spoke of then, who goes only by the name of Slasher Victim 666 as the director of the film, and your gimmick is to not be seen but only heard with a threatening voice altered by a soundboard, dude, give it up. It's just dumb. It's not going to get you nowhere.
Oh,
it's just ridiculous. So I can't see in 50 years time like the there's film colleges out there saying, well, we're going to study the works of Slasher Victim 666 this week, along with the works of Truffaut and Scorsese give it a rest.
If your name's not Slasher Victim 666, go leave us a review on iTunes.
I want to reemphasize, we don't really do the horror film thing.
We're not, I like a lot of horror movies. Like earlier I was talking about Eyes Without a Face, but I don't consume them like a junkie. I'm not a horror junkie.
He goes, like his argument was, oh, but you cover the town in Dreaded Sundown. Well, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
But the thing is, we send me a lot of horror filmmakers by affiliation because they are friends over at Terror Troop and Land of the Creeps, and that's fine. They do their thing, and
we love those guys.
We honestly do. We're not blurting that out. But it's not really our thing. So
yeah,
also, if you listen to the podcast, we actually pointed out Town That Dreaded Sundown is not really a horror film.
No, it's more of a true crime thing.
Yeah, it's like a crime. It's like docudrama. Yeah, it's a crime drama based on real events.
Pretty much so. But yeah, look, we're not knocking it if you do horror films, but saying that you've done something that's unique and it's going to be groundbreaking and it's just a found footage film, it's... No. Sorry. Call me a snob, late. I don't care. Late. Yeah. Yeah. Just not my thing.
But anyway, if you're... not one of the directors Stu has yelled at on the internet. Go over to iTunes, leave us a review. MidnightMovieCowboys@gmail.com for any email business. And look us up on Facebook and Twitter at MMCowboys.
Do that. All right, next week, sign off, lads.
Adios.
Au revoir.
Same.
thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time. Yeah.